While I respect all of kind of legends of investing, I don't ask them for technology advice. And I don't think that we should ask the technologist for necessarily investing advice.
Hello, listeners. My name is Raj Singhal, and welcome to another episode of Breaking Investment Stereotypes. Here we deconstruct world-class investors or wealth managers and deep dive into their investing journey, professionally, personally, or both. This episode is brought to you by Multiply.co, where we believe that investing is an ignored life skill. Our mission is to create a platform where people can find fellow investors, discover investing products, and share investing ideas. We have now gone live and thousands of users are already part of a vibrant community. So do check out our app, which is there both on Apple Store and Play Store, or simply just sign up on web. I want to give a little guidance on how to use the shows. None of the following should be taken as an investment advice. Please see multiply.co/disclosures for more information. We have a very special episode today. We are bringing two of the world's leading crypto experts as guests. Anthony Pompliano is an entrepreneur and technology investor. Most people simply call him Pomp. Pomp currently manages an investment portfolio valued at more than $500 million, including investment in many of the largest companies across the Bitcoin and crypto industry. Additionally, he hosts the popular podcast, The Pomp Podcast, which has been downloaded more than 20 million times. Pomp also writes a daily newsletter, which is read by more than 150,000 investors each morning. Lastly, Pomp's interests lie at the intersection of finance, technology, entrepreneurship, and economics, which he tweets to about more than 1.4 million followers. Sumit Gupta is a co-founder and chief executive officer of CoinDCX, India's first crypto unicorn and the safest cryptocurrency exchange. As a pioneer in India's crypto industry, Sumit has been instrumental in bringing the emerging asset class to the consciousness of India's mainstream. In this role, Sumit is responsible for overall strategy and growth of CoinDCX and is a driving force behind the company's vision to onboard 50 million Indians into crypto. As co-chair of the Blockchain and Crypto Asset Council, whose members are crypto exchange operating in India, Sumit is an influential industry figure who advocates actively for better understanding and adoption of crypto. When Bitcoin began gaining traction in 2014, Sumit saw the potential of leveraging blockchain technology to enable financial inclusion and saw crypto's potential to supercharge India's growing innovation economy. Sumit holds an undergrad and master's degree from Indian Institute of Technology, Bombay. So without further ado, please welcome Pomp and Sumit. Hey, Pomp. Hey, Sumit. Welcome to the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Raj.
Thanks. You know, Pomp, I'll just start with you, right? So, you know, people call you Bitcoin maximalist. Do you agree with that? And how do you distinguish with this whole belief of laser eyes with cult-like obsession?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't really care what labels are, right? I think there's two revolutions going on. I think there's a monetary revolution going on and a technology revolution. The monetary revolution ultimately ends up in maximalism, right? If you live in the United States, you're a fiat US dollar maximalist, meaning that you get paid in dollars, you save in dollars, you buy dollar denominated assets, you pay your taxes in dollars. And so you're a dollar maximalist. And so the end state naturally of kind of a monetary asset is maximalism. And I think that ultimately Bitcoin is going to win the kind of digital currency revolution, right? Or competition. And it'll serve as that global store of value. There's also a technology revolution going on. And the technology revolution is where we see a lot of these smart contract platforms and various other types of technologies playing out. And that technology revolution almost never ends up in maximalism, right? Nobody is a iOS maximalist in the sense that they think Android is completely worthless, right? Or they're not a maximalist in terms of thinking that only one type of hardware manufacturer is valuable, or that only one coding language is valuable. And so ultimately what we're watching is a very high degree of pretty ruthless competition on the technology side. And I think the big difference there is that in the monetary revolution, what people are looking for is they're looking for dependability and security, right? And so if you think about what that looks like, it means that things don't change, right? You know what's going to happen. You can trust that that's going to happen. And the system operates the way that it says it's going to operate. On the technology side, the technology revolution ends up being the exact opposite. You need to change. You need to change very quickly, right? You need to improve. You need to compete. And so that's where you see a lot of these smart contract platforms and other technologies competing on throughput or low fees, et cetera. And so ultimately, I think that I spend, you know, majority of my time on the monetary revolution. I'm intellectually curious about the technology revolution, but I think that's really where people end up getting, you know, kind of caught up on all the labels, et cetera. But I always joke and I say, I probably got a bigger portfolio than most of the haters or Twitter trolls outside of Bitcoin. I just don't feel the need to talk about it on the internet, and that's okay.
that's interesting. You know, a lot of people compare, and I think you've done that as well, that Bitcoin to digital gold, right? And we know that gold market cap is about $10 trillion. I think you mentioned earlier that, you know, Bitcoin can go up to $1 million prize, considering that, you know, Bitcoin technology is 10x better than gold. And I think Cathy would kind of agrees with you. But, you know, Ray Dalio has got a little different take on this, right? So though while he has come to agreeing on Bitcoin has got value, he says half of gold, you know, either is with central bank or used for jewelry, where Bitcoin doesn't have any role to play. So you've got $5 trillion left. You take 20% of that, which is about $1 trillion, which is where Bitcoin market cap was about a month time. And he thinks that's kind of okay. I mean, you know, what is your take on the whole Bitcoin as digital gold?
I don't, while I respect all of kind of legends of investing, I don't ask them for technology advice. And I don't think that we should ask the technologist for necessarily investing advice, right? So kind of understanding where somebody comes from, I think, is an important piece of this. And ultimately what we get is Bitcoin is a market expanding technology, right? Because it doesn't just eat into gold. What else do people use, let's say, as a store of value? Well, they use real estate, they use fine art, they use many other types of assets, as well as gold is also. And so I think that's really what we're watching play out here is Bitcoin's not just competing with digital gold. Gold is one asset that people use as that store of value. It's eating into all of these assets. On top of that, I think that Bitcoin ends up being a 10 to 100, maybe even 1,000x improvement to the technology of gold. And so for it to simply be a 2x in market cap for, let's say, 100 to 1,000x improvement, I think isn't the wildest idea. And you add in kind of these other components. How many people in the Bitcoin community diverted dollars that usually would have went into gold or fine art or real estate or even cash as a store of value, right? That's what really where it's eating into that market cap. And you see this with the demonetization of gold, but you're also seeing it in some of these other asset classes as well, where young people specifically are not holding bonds or anything else like that. Instead, what they're doing is they're choosing to hold this digital decentralized currency. And I think that's ultimately where you get these large market caps in the future. It's not just a gold comparison, it's other assets as well.
Okay. Talking about volatility, right? We have seen Bitcoin prices pretty volatile, you know, currently has been dropping even earlier as well. But the Sharpe ratio is also pretty high, right? So while, you know, Bitcoin can be a great asset for investment for, say, hedge funds, but for retail investors, how should they look at Bitcoin for investment?
Yeah, I mean, I think that nobody sits around and says like, wow, the US dollar is really volatile, right? But the US dollar crashed 30% against the S&P last year. It crashed, you know, 20-25% against real estate. It crashed 65% against Bitcoin. It crashed 7%, according to the official numbers, against just consumer goods. And so ultimately, there's one thing that's guaranteed in finance, and that's that fiat currencies are going to be devalued over the medium to long term, and they continue to lose value. And so not only are they volatile, but they happen to be volatile to the downside. They don't really have volatility to the upside. And so why that's important is because we're at the highest level of volatility in the US dollar in 40 years, right? Given the devaluation of the currency and the rate at which we're seeing. And that's using official numbers. Unofficial numbers are probably even worse. And so ultimately, I think that it's important to remember that every single currency is, quote unquote, volatile. But the volatility is not in the currency itself. The volatility usually is expressed in the exchange rate for another currency. It's expressed in the exchange rate for another asset, right? The asset itself is not volatile. It's what can you get for it, the purchasing power. And ultimately, what we saw is everyone says that, oh, Bitcoin is volatile. Well, Bitcoin went up 65% against the dollar last year. And so ultimately, you can say that, yes, day to day, there is kind of emotions in the market, et cetera. But that's what a free market currency has, is there is no manipulation. There is no hours of operations, right? There is no ability to manipulate interest rates or the monetary policy of the asset. It is simply a free market programmatic monetary policy. When you get that, the reason why that's important is ultimately you get over the medium to long term a very clear signal. Is the world seeing this as more volatile and valuable or less volatile and valuable? And what we've seen is volatility has actually been coming down over the last 12 years, and ultimately the value has been increasing significantly. And so, you know, again, nobody walks around and says the fiat currencies are volatile, but I would argue that they're more volatile, and it's actually scarier to have that in your portfolio, right? Something Ray Dalio and I agree on. He says cash is trash, yeah. Right? I didn't want to hold cash. And so I think same thing here is there's a whole group of young people who are realizing that there's a new asset, a new way of kind of thinking about this, and they're electing to put some of, right? Not even the majority in many cases, just some of their assets or wealth in there so that it can't be debased away by a government or a central bank.
Awesome. Sumit, let me come to you. You know, we have, you know, crypto most of the time stays in turmoil. There's always confusion from the government as well, right? From regulations, taxations, there is a panic chaos. But despite all this, I mean, you guys at CoinDCX, you know, have not only just managed to sail through, actually created a unicorn and which, you know, all of us are very, very proud of. Tell us more about your journey and more importantly, why crypto took off in India?
Sure. So that's a big question. I have been in this space for more than 5 years now, 4.5, 5 years, and I've seen waves of excitement among Indian youth. I think last time I remember in 2017, people were like crazy about investing in Bitcoin, and that was largely price appreciation. But now I think there's a shift in perception. People are now talking more about it, in their networks, in their friend circle. Every now and then, when I meet and talk to people, they actually are keen to understand more about the space, and they have this belief that it's a very good asset to have as part of their portfolio for better, and something that they would want to be invested in. So I think of the larger awareness talk around crypto, it's pretty cool, right? The trend that we've been seeing is crypto is the asset class of choice for the new millennial Gen Z generation, right? I have not seen, like, my wife, she started investing, and for the first asset class that she invested is crypto, right? And my bhabhi, crypto. I mean, a lot of Indian women, you know, they've started their investing journey with crypto. Again, like young people, they don't like gold cool, right? They don't find equity investing cool. They started with crypto. And I think that is something that has gotten a lot of new people into crypto. And while initially it was a lot of it because of price appreciation, but now we have seen people talking about it. People understand now. 3 years back, that was not the case. People understand why they should have 1%, 3% in their, Bitcoin in their portfolio. So that's a big change. And I think it's a change in the right direction. At least people are now talking about investing. Financial literacy was very, low in India, but now at least people are talking about it, especially given, the pandemic, people got a lot of time with at their disposal. So overall, I think it's good for the economy. Plus, talking about regulation, earlier there were like few million people invested in crypto. Now we're talking about 20 million people who are already invested in crypto. That's a big population. You can't ignore it now. Government has also realized that, you know, if they try to do anything wrong, and, you know, they have seen the kind of noise that will come up, and then POM might be aware of it on Twitter or social media everywhere, right? And then media, just like you talk about anything wrong about crypto, it just like comes up in the media, and then, oh, India should not ban crypto. And then you get opinions from a lot of people. So that has also changed the perception. Largely, I've seen a big shift in the last 12, 18 months. Earlier, there was talk around banning, especially post January 2021. There was a lot of discussion, debate, dialogues that happened between the industry as well as the policymakers, and everything went in the right direction. Now, as of today, you will not see anyone, any government department talking about, oh, we want to ban crypto. Everyone is now trying to find the answer. Okay, how can we regulate it? How can we protect the interest of the consumers? And that's basically all of that going in the right direction. Of course, nobody knows how to regulate it. They are now trying to figure out, you know, given the country, given the scale at which India operates, what is the right regulatory framework and who should regulate it? So a lot of these questions are currently being discussed. And I expect in the next few months, at least we'll see a lot of clarity coming from the government side in terms of taxation, in terms of some broad guidelines that, okay, you need to follow these guidelines if you want to operate a crypto business in the country. And that's largely good.
Yeah. One more question I have, you know, you guys kind of run an exchange, right? So And in because of this whole extreme volatility, you know, big variation in valuation, how do you make sure you have an effective system in place to, you know, model, manage, balance risk, you know, in what on a day-to-day activity, what do you guys, you know, pass through your exchange? So tell us more about that.
So in terms of volatility, of course, I mean, the system has seen those sort of volatile movements multiple times in the last 4 years. You know, in 2021 itself, we have seen moments where market fell like 30-40% in a single day. So that's something that we have solved for already. And then, of course, I mean, whenever that goes down, I think bigger problem for us is whenever the market goes down, clear trend is like more people want to now invest. Okay. And how do we handle that load? So we work with a lot of third-party service providers and they go down because our systems is now handling like, you know, hundreds of thousands of order at a given moment, right? How do you handle that sort of a system load? That's something, you know, even though we have solid at our end, but you know, the payment gateways or they sort of, or even the SMS gateways, they sort of, you know, get stuck. But largely, I think more of that, most of that problem is solved right now. Of course, I mean, whenever the market goes up or down, we see a lot of excitement in the market and our, you know, all the metrics goes up. I mean, if the market is flat, you know, people will come, invest, do SIP, but whenever you see downfall or uptick in the prices, you suddenly see massive growth in terms of users.
Yeah, so Pomp, SIP is something I think kind of unique to India. You know, people, it's called systematic investment plan, usually done for mutual funds, but people have started doing that for crypto as well. On ETF Pomp, you know, US has been dilly-dallying a lot. There was a lot of expectation when the current SEC commissioner came that, you know, they will approve. But nothing has happened yet. What do you think on that? What is stopping them?
Yeah, well, so they approved an ETF. I think it just wasn't the one everyone wanted, right? They approved the Bitcoin futures ETF.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, again, the difference between a spot and a futures ETF, I'll leave that to the ETF experts as to why they believe the spot ETF. I tend to agree the spot ETF would be better for individuals. But I think that the harder part really to kind of wrap your head around here is these are products that have already been approved in other jurisdictions, right? The United States kind of hangs its hat on being innovative, on being the leader on a global scale, on being able to actually drive a lot of that innovation and kind of economic prosperity. And what we have in the US market today is either no access for public exposure, or you can basically go and you can buy something like the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. You can go and buy, Bitwise has some vehicles, et cetera, or you have to go to another jurisdiction. And what we find in those kind of trust-based products is that they have premiums and discounts. And it ends up actually, especially right now where there's very deep discounts to NAV, can be harmful to investors. And so, you know, ultimately, I don't think this is anything I have to say or any thoughts here are going to be disruptive or kind of new to the conversation. I think that it's just a matter of time. And ultimately, what we're going to watch is we're going to see when they end up deciding to go ahead and make the ETF approval. I think it's a matter of when, not if. And the thing I'm probably more interested in is who gets it first. Is it going to be a large bank? Is it going to be somebody like a Grayscale who gets to kind of convert their trust? Or is it going to be one of these kind of new applications? I don't know what the answer is yet. But ultimately, I think we've made some progress. I don't know if it's necessarily the ideal progress in many people's mind. But, you know, let's see what happens here. And I'm very much of the mind of, you know, don't say never. And also don't think that everything is the worst part of the world, because it could always be worse than it is today.
Yeah. You know, coming to the government side, right? So we have seen some champions like, you know, the state you're staying in, Florida, has been a big champion. El Salvador has, of course, you know, accepted that as a legal tender as well. We have China banning it. There were talks of India was trying to ban that, or there was a talk of India banning it. You know, Russia is always in the news for that. How do you see a trend in any of this regulation? Are you seeing that more and more people are getting more open about this whole thing? Is it more accepting now? Actually, this is for both of you. So, you know, Pomp maybe first and then Sumit, you can.
Sure. So look, Bitcoin is an open decentralized network, right? And so is the internet. And ultimately, every country had a decision to make when it came to the internet. You could either embrace it, use it, give it access to your people and your citizens and say, look, we want to use this to improve our country. We want to create economic prosperity. We want to push ourselves forward. Or we're going to sit it out and we don't want to participate. And some countries literally did sit out the internet, somebody like in North Korea, and it didn't turn out so hot for them, right? And so ultimately, what I think we have to get our heads around is whether you believe that certain countries are our allies our adversaries, or we're completely agnostic to kind of their position on a global scale from a geopolitical perspective, you have to understand that everyone has the opportunity to participate in a global decentralized network. And so you can sit back and say, well, we don't want to use something because they're going to use it. Or you can say, if they're going to use it, we sure as hell better make sure we're the leader and that we benefit from it more than anybody else. The United States did that with the internet. And ultimately, I think that's what we should and will do when it comes to Bitcoin. Now, there's other places like India. I tell people all the time, I went to India a couple of years ago. And it's one of my favorite places in the world. And really, the entrepreneurial spirit in that country is undeniable. And the energy and the technology innovation and kind of the pushing forward of progress using technology. And so I don't think that the Indian population is going to sit by and say, you know what? We think that the government is right. We should just regulate this away and we shouldn't use any of this technology. I think quite the contrary. Similar to the United States is that the users, the population, the citizens, they're going to continue to adopt this technology and they'll say to the politicians, hey, get on board, but we're going to have to find new politicians. And I think that's really what a lot of politicians are waking up to around the world is that Bitcoin is good for business. It's good for your campaign. It's good for your donations. It's good for your constituency. And ultimately, it's good for the economic position or the economic state of your jurisdiction. And the faster that politicians realize that, the ones who begin to embrace this early, they're seeing the benefits and they're going to pull along all of their colleagues and peers. So I think, again, it's going to happen. It's just a little bit more painful than I think most people wished it to be.
Sumit?
Yeah, I mean, I have similar thoughts as Pomp. I'm sure that every country will eventually have to regulate it. Banning is not the option. If you try to ban it, you'll end up creating an underground economy, which is not in the control of government. So that's something that no regulator wants, right? Also, I think India has a very unique advantage of, you know, being as a global, undeniably like a global technology powerhouse. Like if you look at it, the back end, even though internet companies are not born out of India, but the technology, the engine is like run by Indian entrepreneurs or Indian developers, right? India has that edge. And when we talk about this technology, I think that India, if it harnesses the potential, right, it has a lot to gain, right? Blockchain and in crypto have a lot of role to play in terms of India leapfrogging various steps and then, you know, coming at the global stage and then lead this revolution. It just that needs to be you know, harness properly. And if you set a conducive environment where at least, you know, Indian crypto businesses are given the opportunity, India can gain a lot. And this is something that, you know, many regulators or many people within the government have also understood now. They have seen like how companies are like Matic are born out of India. And we can see similar, like dozens of such companies. And I'm very optimistic, like in the next few years, you'll see hundreds of such companies coming out from India. I have already seen like a lot of my friends from college and, you know, people I'm in touch with from the Web2 world, they have not tried, you know, they are not trying to shift to Web3 and then start building companies in the Web3 domain. It's a very positive sign. And nobody, like no government wants this talent to shift outside the country. And they have seen that happening over the last couple of years. They have seen how entrepreneurs are shifting their base outside the country and all of that value creation is also happening outside, which is alarming. And, one thing is very clear as per the, you know, in our discussion that if you regulate the sector, it's going to give orderly growth to the industry, right? It will give a lot of confidence to investors. You will not be in a situation where investors are getting caught in bad schemes and you will have regulations which will protect the investors. Innovations will continue in the country. It's also going to be a massive wealth creation opportunity for the government. Like they will have billions of dollars in taxes just by regulating this asset class. And I'm hopeful that in the next few months, you will have some sort of tax guidelines around crypto, which has been pending for a long time. Overall, I think if you just take care of investor protection, I think that that's just going to give a lot of comfort to the regulators. I think we are very close to that, where regulators understand the potential. And then they have also understood what if they try to ban it or if they don't regulate it, right? So if you look at the cost benefit analysis, then it's clear decision for government also to go in the direction of regulation.
Okay, thanks. Crypto is seen as anti-institution, being a decentralized the world, right? It's optimizing for individualism. We are seeing an internet culture building up as well. But at the same time, there is a meme culture as well, right? I mean, you do all this thing about shitcoin, and trying to derail the whole moment, right? So What do you think of the whole, what do you make out of this whole cultural revolution, which is happening through crypto and the internet side?
Yeah, this is nothing new, right? You know, there's a million things that I could go and point to that people are constantly buying and selling and trading. Sports cards, right? The idea that people are buying and selling pieces of cardboard with some images on it. That's crazy to some people. To other people, that's their entire life, their entire business. They can't sleep because that's all they think about, right? Art, it's literally a piece of canvas with some paint on it. Well, that's somebody's entire life, or somebody else, that's the stupidest thing in the world. And so those are just some examples. And I think that what we're watching is new technology where this is being replicated again. And I think that what some people are uncomfortable with is that value is ultimately determined between the buyer and seller in a market. And sometimes that gets overheated. Sometimes that ends up being kind of the extreme fear, right? And that's where you get these price fluctuations. But I think that individuals have to be very kind of intelligent. They have to be thoughtful. They have to be responsible in understanding the idea of, look, do you actually understand what these assets are? Do you have a view as to what their underlying value will be? Do you have a view on where that value is going? Simply buying something because you think it's going to go up in value, that's fine. There's plenty of people who go gamble at the casino. They buy lottery tickets, all that type of stuff, right? But understand what that is. That's not investing in the sense of, you know, kind of buying long-term assets that are really good that you want to hold for forever. It's speculating. And speculation is fine. I don't think that we should kind of shake our finger at people who are speculating, but we should call it what it is. And we should also be adamant about sharing what the risks of speculation are, right? And I think that really that's what is missing here is the nuance of the conversation. So I think it's a repeat of what we've been seeing for literally, you know, centuries and centuries. I think that as those past stories, there will be winners and there'll be losers, probably more losers than winners. And, you know, there's an entire generation of people who are going to have to learn the hard way why kind of thoughtful long-term investing is a timeless kind of finance principle. But, you know, again, I'm not here to judge anybody. I just choose myself in many cases not to participate in those types of things because I don't believe that they have durability. And what I'm ultimately seeking in my portfolio is kind of the intersection of durability and asymmetry, which I think that, you know, people have heard me talk about quite a bit.
Yeah, let's talk about NFTs, right? So in NFTs coming out as a possible use case of this whole technology as well. A lot of global celebrities, including, you know, some of the Indian Bollywood celebrities have jumped in. Justin Bieber just bought, you know, Bored Apes 3001. Do you think the way the NFT is moving, is it about more about digital identity or you think it's more than that? Pom first and then I'll come to Sumit.
Yeah, I think what we're watching right now has nothing to do with where it's going to end up going, right? Really what we're watching is that there's this new kind of innovation, this new piece of technology that's been created, the ability to have kind of uniqueness or to have, you know, private property in the digital realm. And what people immediately do is they take what ends up actually being somewhat of an intellectually lazy approach, right? Because it's the simple way to think about it. Okay, what can I take from the old world and simply replicate with this new technology? And there's some value there, but that's not the true disruptive value, right? The true disruptive value is what does the new technology unlock? What are the new features or what are the new products or services that can now be built that previously were not possible, right? If you go back and you look at something like Uber, Uber kind of took the world by storm, but the unlocking piece of technology wasn't that they wrote some software. It's that the iPhone came out and had GPS in it. Because once you had the GPS in the phone, now the driver and the rider could be connected with some degree of accuracy. And therefore, that unlocked the potential for Uber to be created. And so I think that's really where kind of in this first iteration, everyone is looking at like, okay, what can we do that we're just replicating from the old world? Where I think the true value is, and most of the smartest investors that I know and respect when I talk with them, what they're looking for is what are the business models, the use cases that previously weren't possible, but now are possible with this technology. And I think that's where the true value and innovation will, and kind of value creation will ultimately come from.
Sumit?
Yes, Raj, I think we are yet to see a lot of interesting use cases around NFTs. Right now, all I see is, like, you know, price speculation in NFTs as well, which kind of concerns me. People are crazy. They don't even understand what that is. Just like the previous person who bought, was it like for 10 Ether and now it can go to 20 Ether. I think that's something which makes me uncomfortable. But I think we have largely seen this where, like, even during the ICO, when people don't really understanding what the project is doing and just end up buying it. I mean, whenever something is new, people just get into it just to make quick money, but I personally feel that this will calm down in India a little bit, you know, in the coming months, and then you'll see a lot more sanity and a lot more interesting relevant use cases out of this. But right now it's all crazy, and you know, all the Indian celebrities or Bollywood actors are jumping into it, so that, you know, just trying to extract the juice out of this.
Yeah, so I think it was, you know, Balaji on Tim Ferriss show when asked that, you know, if given $100 million, where will he put his money? And I think he said he will put half in Bitcoin, half in Ethereum. Now, we have got 1,000 other cryptocurrencies in the world, right? I mean, you know, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, and many others. It's a question for both of you. If you have to choose one or two based on either application or purely from the investment, what would that be? Tom, I mean, I think I can know what you're going to say, but yeah, want to hear from you.
Yeah, these questions, I think, are always important to kind of caveat. What are you trying to accomplish? Right. And, you know, as people probably see from tweets and other things that I've said and done, my entire focus is durability. It's what is going to be here in 50 years. And the thing that I have the highest confidence in is Bitcoin. I think that the decentralized nature, the high degree of security, the social consensus, the Lindy effect, all these different aspects that feed into it. I think that most people in the space would say, yes, Bitcoin has the highest probability of still being here. Now, the trade-off is that when you have deep conviction or kind of social consensus that something is going to have value over a long period of time, it's because there is lower risk. And if you have lower risk, then you might have lower returns. Now, the question becomes, what does lower returns mean? If Bitcoin has compounded at, you know, 170, 180% annually for a decade. Does that mean that the return now in moving forward will be 125%? Well, compared to the legacy world, that's still pretty attractive, right? Or does that mean that it'll become, you know, 8% compounded annually for the next decade? And it'll look something more like the stock market. I don't think that it's going to end up being the latter. I think it's going to be much more like the former, but we'll see. And so ultimately, I would take it. I would put it in Bitcoin. I think that Bitcoin is the most durable asset in the world. And I would just hold it and kind of just let that asset continue to do what it does. And I wouldn't be so concerned about, you know, do I outperform one asset or another over the short term? To me, it's all about, you know, who lasts and who has the highest probability of kind of being secured over time.
Sumit?
Yeah, Pomp has covered it, but yeah, I would refrain from commenting on that for obvious reasons. I've seen media picking that up at times. So, but yeah, you got the answer.
Okay, thanks. What are the most smart idea people are building on using, say, Bitcoin or Ethereum?
So that
some of the smart ideas, I think I find APN is pretty exciting. Did some small investment there. APN is very exciting, you know, using push notifications in the blockchain world. That's something that is missing. Whenever a liquidation happens, how do you basically communicate that interfacing between the end customers and the protocols is not that streamlined. That's exciting. And of course, I mean, a lot of people are currently building, you know, very exciting use cases from India, but of course, they are there in a very early stage. But yeah, that's one project that I like, apart from several other ones. Yeah.
Bomb, anything? Sure.
I would say the Lightning Network is super interesting. I think a lot of folks have kind of written that off and they basically have just kind of forgotten. But what we're watching is a decentralized payment system that's built to scale that now has onboarded one of the largest social media companies in the world in Twitter. It's onboarded a nation state in El Salvador. And I think it only continued to kind of dominate as it moves forward. But there's no CEO, there's no marketing budget, there's no anything. It's just volunteers on the internet coming together and building something pretty special. And so ultimately, I think the Lightning Network is something that should, it already gets some attention, but it definitely needs to get more and more attention on the mainstream.
Okay. I have a couple more questions, Pompa. I know you have to go. Dogecoin, you know, we can't end this conversation without talking about Dogecoin. I mean, why on the earth, you know, Elon Musk was busy sending people to Mars, he need to talk about Dogecoin?
Listen, I think that people enjoy talking about all sorts of things on the internet. It's not my cup of tea. I tend to think that what we've watched play out in price with the massive drawdown was pretty simple to see it coming. As I always tell folks, you know, there's a lot of people in the technology industry that we consider heroes for specific reasons. I don't think that anyone believes Elon Musk is their hero because of his cryptocurrency trading chops. And so, you know, pay attention to what he says when it comes to things around rocketry or, you know, EVs and things that he's really spending his time and energy on. I don't necessarily think that he would even claim to be an expert on Dogecoin or cryptocurrencies. And so I think the same thing can be said about a lot of other tokens as well. But I hold none. And as I usually tell folks, that's the best way to tell, you know, what I think about it is just look at my portfolio rather than what I say.
Okay. Central bank digital currency. Do you guys see? I mean, I can't see any difference between that and, you know, what we already have in our credit cards in a wallet. But what do you guys think of central bank digital currency?
Sumit.
So I think one is like the retail CBDC as a, I think that has a good value in terms of driving larger financial inclusion. I think it's going to be a magical combination when you combine, you know, people in tier 2, tier 3, tier 4 cities of India, which have internet connection plus Aadhaar card. You don't need to even need a bank branch to open up a bank account. If you implement that at large scale, I think that's going to drive larger financial inclusion, which is what will take the economy, grow the economy. And then in terms of larger, I think CBDC for cross-border payment, that's something that India is not. I think that's India is a huge, big remittance market. You just need to use it smartly, and then you'll end up saving billions of dollars every year and just using it efficiently. And I think that definitely, I think India is very bullish on it for some reasons, given that other countries like China and all of the other nations are experimenting with it. But I mean, it's just like, you know, rupee in the blockchain world. And then I think it will add larger transparency. Right now, banks in the country, you know, they'll start talking to each other, and, you know, it will add a layer of transparency. And that's what I think central bank also wants to see, that how can we, you know, use CBDS as a concept to foster greater transparency and largely, I think, you know, drive larger financial inclusion. But I think it's on a very early stage. We'll see. It will take years for the country to come up with a, you know, and do a pilot. India is behind than other countries, but let's hope for the best and, you know, see what India does. But I think overall central bank is pretty bullish on it.
That's last question. So last question, you know, India is, you know, as I said, right, there are a lot of entrepreneurs who are actually now looking to enter in this crypto world, trying to do something. Sumit, you mentioned that. What advice would each of you give to, you know, those crypto enthusiasts who's trying to make something in this world? Pomp and then Sumit.
I would just tell them, keep going. You know, it's centuries ago, the frontier meant that you had to physically go to the new world. You had to literally get on a ship and go somewhere. It meant that you had to move atoms. Today, the frontier is in the bits world. And what you get to do is you get to build the future. You can do it sitting on your couch. You can do it sitting in front of a computer, which is a pretty incredible reduction of friction and cost. But still that spirit of those on the frontier, those that are willing to push innovation, those that are willing to explore, those that are willing to experiment is important. And ultimately, the people who create the future are the people who actually try to do that, who are willing to take the time and invest the energy to do it. And so I think that's probably the biggest thing that I would push people on is just keep going. Understand that everything you try is not going to necessarily be accurate or valuable, but there is immense value in experimentation and kind of pushing the pace of innovation. And the beauty of the technology industry is you only have to be right one time. One time, that's it. And so it really encourages folks to take as many swings as they can. And I'm excited to see what everyone builds over time.
Sumit?
Absolutely. I think this is one thing that I've learned also in my journey. It started like when we were about to launch the platform, 3 days before that, India came up with this banking ban and everyone knows about it. And then we had to tweak our strategy overnight. And then it was a time full of ups and downs, very challenging times. We continued to build, you know, kept our heads down. And you know, now, you know, Coindesk is India's first crypto unicorn. And now, you know, if you ask me 5 years down the line, I can go look back and say, okay, you know, this is one in one area where at least you were able to create a small impact. So, you know, as Pom mentioned, like, just keep going. Don't worry about regulations will come or not. Just keep going. You have to have belief that it will come. And that's the belief that we are also going after. And then if you are building the right thing, if you're solving the right problems, then it ultimately will end up building a larger company. That, you know, that's something which the key message, and persistence has a lot of value, especially if you're operating in Indian market, right? If you continue to work, because a lot of people, 95% of friends who are building exchanges in 2017, every second person I meet was like trying to build an exchange. When this banking ban news came, like everyone just went away, right? Nobody was focusing on that business. And that's like, I feel it's a very opportunistic approach. I think you, if you believe in it, something for the long term, you just have to hold on to it and just continue building it. Ultimately, you'll get the success.
Okay, guys. So, you know, if you have to believe somebody on fiat investment, listen to Ray Dalio. If you want to believe somebody on, you know, going to Mars, listen to Elon Musk. But if you have to believe somebody on crypto, listen to Pom and Sumit. So thanks a lot with that. You know, really wonderful talking to you. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Sumit, nice to see you.
Yes, talk soon. All right. Bye.
Thanks, Sumit, for staying over. You know, one thing I want to talk to you, right? So gold is a very cultural thing in India, right? So it's passed on from generations to generations, right? We all got from our dad, they all got from their own. But Bitcoin, you know, for it to happen, achieve the same status, it is again going to take some generations. So how do you see, a lot of people talk about Bitcoin as a replacement for digital gold. What do you think that for India?
See, first of all, I mean, if you compare gold and Bitcoin, definitely there are various advantages, to Bitcoin than the gold. I mean, if you look at what could be a better store of value, if you compare the different parameters in terms of, durability, in terms of understanding whether it is, pure or not, in terms of, what could be a better store of value in the long term, I think gold, in my view, exceeds than Bitcoin. And your point is very valid. Bitcoin, gold has a long, long history, right? Centuries old. And you know, a lot of people can relate to it. I think one of the reason could be Indian people, because they can touch and feel it. Yeah. And because you can wear gold as jewelry, I think that is one of the use cases. Though I believe that a lot of gold that is there, is still in bullions, right? And you don't, yeah. In India, there's a culture where you can, wear gold jewelry, but that's not the case outside. So that's, I will not count that as a real use case. But largely, the population, the audience that is valuing Bitcoin is a lot different, right, than gold. Like I can imagine, my parents, my mom and dad buying gold as a store of value or wherever they have savings. But my brother, my bhabhi, a lot of these young people, young crowd, I mean, they don't find themselves very relatable to gold, and they don't want to invest in gold. It's boring. It's not exciting. They want to invest in the future. And that's the reason why I have seen a lot of young people, especially people who are in the age group of 21 to 35. That's where 60% of our customers lie. And then they sort of like are crazy about Bitcoin. I mean, if you give them 10,000 rupees to invest in, and if you ask them to choose one, most probably everyone will say Bitcoin, right? And that's the kind of affinity. Yeah. And, there's a cultural shift, as you rightly mentioned, with this young generation. They relate more to Bitcoin as a store of value, right? It's digital and they are a digital native audience, right? They consume, they spend more than half of their time, just browsing content or learning things from the internet, which was not the case with our older generation. So I think that's there's a shift, in terms of mindset as well. And I think for the coming generation or for people who are, above 18 or 20 who have some disposable income or who have some savings, I think most of the young crowd will choose Bitcoin over gold.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my kids are grown up, so I can't imagine my kids ever buying gold at all. So
yeah,
let's talk about the whole metaverse. Is Facebook also jumping in? The whole Web3 you mentioned. How do you see that whole thing developing, especially from the India point of view?
Sure. See, this is definitely something where I feel a lot of innovation will happen, and these are different use cases, right? Earlier when you see games, right? Games were just a game where, I can play, right? And there were a lot of limitations technologically, like maybe concurrent 100 people can play, but now with this metaverse and leveraging blockchain technology and adopting that, I think you can you can see this scope widening a lot more, right? Where you know, all of these platforms, you know, will have multiple use cases where you can have concerts, you know, having lakhs of people at one go, you know, especially since the pandemic, we have seen several use cases. I was not actually expecting such high traction in a lot of these, use cases, but it just picked up really well. And now, I mean, a lot of this audience, which is new and spending a lot of time digitally, right? It just comes naturally down. For me, like, I would not want to spend maybe 5-6 hours in the metaverse, but for the new generation, I have seen them playing like 6 hours PUBG, like back to back. I don't relate to it, but I think for the generation that's coming, you know, they will have their own digital identity, and, you know, which is interacting with a lot of people in the digital world. There's going to be a new economy that will be created, people interacting within that economy with digital assets. I think a lot of use cases, and especially I personally see that gaming will have a lot of use cases and traction in this world, and games will have a lot of their own economy where you will have people coming into this, people not just, even if you're, for example, if you're not playing a game, what else will you do in the current Web2 world? But in the metaverse, there can be tens of things you can do, you know, interact with that. You can have, you know, their own sort of stores. You will have, it's like an independent world where you can play around in that ecosystem. Even if you're not an active participant, there can be a secondary economy, to that. And then games will emerge as a platform and not just a play. So there are a lot of use cases that will come up. A lot of that is not discovered yet, but I've seen the traction, you know, happening in some of these plays, and you know, the new audience that will come up, and then of course the companies like Meta, you know, they will drive adoption to a large extent. When they're spending billions of dollars in this, naturally the adoption is going to grow.
Yeah. The other thing I want to talk to you about, you know, there's a lot of interesting technology coming from India, right? So, you know, you mentioned one of them, Polygon, you know, it's coming out of India, right? How do you see in which part of this whole crypto space India taking a leadership, you know, position in the world?
Undeniably, I think a lot of these blockchain-based protocols that's coming up, right? I think India deserves to lead that race in the coming years. I expect that. It's fact that India has such a massive population of developers, engineers. The only challenge is they are not comfortable venturing into the space because the regulations are not favoring it, right? And then there's so much complexity and talk around it and so much confusion in the media. But as soon as you see that opening up, I think a lot of these entrepreneurs or developers, engineers, they'll start building on top of this technology, and you'll see a lot of, I mean, Matic is just one example. I see dozens of Matics coming out from India in the next few years. And that's, you know, gonna basically, you know, billions of dollars of companies, you know, they'll emerge out of India without any doubt. That's something that I'm very bullish on, especially given the power India has, the talented amount of developers, engineers. Even if 1% of them jump into this space, then you're gonna win it, and that's the strength India has, right?
Yeah.
Right now India is not leveraging or harnessing it completely because of the lack of clarity or challenges around the space, but as soon as that opens up, you will see, you know, quick time, you'll see hundreds and thousands of startups or entrepreneurs building out solutions and working on different use cases in this space, not just building for India, but also for the world. And that is when India will become a net exporter of technology, which is going to be good for the nation, rather than just we have lost the race in terms of internet world where we are not, sourcing technologies or tools from some of the global companies. I think that should not happen in this period. And India should basically build those solutions, build those use cases, and then build for the world.
Okay. Last question. So this whole retail investing, right, in India, which took off but now we have seen volatility in the market in the last couple of months where Bitcoin prices have kind of halved, right? How do you guys see, are you still seeing new people coming in? Are people still adding to their investments or people are taking a step back and observing, what are they doing, the investors?
So people, clear trend is people who are very bullish in it, people who are hodling, you know, whenever a market falls, they look at that as an opportunity to add on to their investments. Clear trend we have seen, and depends. I mean, it depends on from persona to persona, right? People who are bullish, people like you and me who understand the subject. I've seen them, buying Bitcoin whenever the market falls. But people who are just experimenting, they don't understand. They think that, okay, you know, every time this will continuously go up, and then you'll not see the market going down. And, you know, people who come with a very short-term mindset, you know, just trying to see, okay, I want to make 5x in 1 month. And I think that's a totally wrong mentality. And that other kind of audience, they get shocked. Oh, we never expected Bitcoin to fall. And then, but that's a very small part of audience, but largely, I think we see a lot of new smart investors, right? As the space is getting more matured and when market, when the prices fell after 2017, you know, from $19,000 to $3,000, I think a lot of people have learned that, you know, this can also fall to like 70-80%, and that sort of volatility made them more mature. People who are entering into crypto for the first time, I think it's important that you invest in it from a very long-term perspective. Do not think of it as, you know, it will continuously go up. You know, these are cycles of the market. What we have seen is when the market is flat, you don't see much activity. You don't see a lot of buying or selling. Whenever you see market going up, you know, a lot of people buy that time because they get FOMO'd that, okay, you know, if I don't buy right now, it will go to $70,000, $80,000. So that's one activity that happens. And whenever the market falls, smart investors come in. Whenever the market goes up, people who are into FOMO, they buy in. So in either direction, we see activity, but I think largely, we have seen a lot more maturity in terms